This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The results are in from the 2018 general election, and some of the top positions in the state appear to have flipped from Republican control to the Democrats. But was there really a blue wave in the Cooley region and the state? Today we're hashing out local and state election results with local political analysts. Joining us are Joe Heim, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, Sam Shinta, Political Science Lecturer at UWL, and Keith Knutson, History Professor at Viterbo University. So the Associated Press has called the race for Democrat Tony Evers, even though Governor Walker has not conceded yet. Joe, did we see this coming?
You could say yes and no, but I guess I'll throw in the yes because the polls had this race very close, and that's the way it turned out, basically. It was a very close election. So I think that was what surprised me a little bit was the degree to which the down ballot Democrats statewide. If you look at the statewide results, they were almost across the board Democratic. You move down one level to the legislature, and it was quite a different picture, however.
Yeah, and I want to dig into, you know, what this election means for the legislature in just a moment. But, you know, Sam, I wonder if you could talk about, you know, what Western Wisconsin kind of looked like in this election for the governor's race.
Well, it looked pretty blue for the governor's race, but a lighter shade of blue than other parts of the state. And I think that's pretty typical of Western Wisconsin is that this is a part of the state that trends light blue. And trends to the Democratic side, but not overwhelmingly so. We've got a nice balance here, and we certainly see that in our local representation because our local representatives are tend to be people who are bipartisan in nature and work across the aisle. So I think you saw that borne out in this one as well. And it's always funny to look at that map of Wisconsin because you see this kind of field of red usually in eastern Minnesota and then surrounding western Wisconsin, and you see this little strip of blue that kind of pokes out and stands out in every map.
Yeah, Keith, was there anything really surprising in this race for governor that you thought?
Well, Governor Walker lost because he lost support in southeastern Wisconsin, the exurbs, which have been quite supportive of him in the past, I think down as much as 5 or 6 percentage points in support there. Dane County turned out big for the Democrat, Evers. But talking about locally, to the south of us, a Republican held on to an open seat. Lauren Oldenburg defeated Paul Burr, and that seemed to be a pretty hot race, and Burr made it close. And then to the north, Kathleen Weinhout's empty state Senate seat was taken over by the Republicans. So the talk of a blue wave has to be tempered with the capacity of the Republicans to maintain the state legislature. I know you want to get there, but there's a real anomaly there that we should discuss.
So as I mentioned, you know, Governor Walker has not conceded this race at this point. His campaign has said that he wants to wait for the official canvas and has mentioned some issues with some of the ballots potentially. You know, Sam, what's the likelihood that we could see a recount in this race or even see, you know, things shift the other way?
Well, as things stand right now, we would not see a recount because we're above that 1% threshold. So the law that ironically the governor signed into law that was put into place for the recount has that 1% threshold. And we're about 1.2, 1.3%. So we're above that threshold, which would keep a recount from happening. Now, obviously, if there is something problematic with some of the ballots, that could spur some of this that could change those numbers rather quickly. So it's a fluid situation. The official canvass is due, I think, Tuesday of next week. And so there's some time for this to still play out. But if things stood exactly as they would right now, there's not going to be a recount. Mr. Evers will be the Superintendent Evers would be the governor.
Yeah, Keith.
Well, the fluidity you're referring to is probably dependent upon the governor's accusations so far unsubstantiated.
Exactly.
So I don't think there's a whole lot of fluidity. There's the governor kind of trying to keep his head above water and probably looking for much of anything that he can find to alter the results. But I wouldn't call this fluid. I would call this a loser looking for a way out.
Joe, what are your thoughts on this?
One other element of this, listening to the governor, if the recount the canvas points out a slight differences from what they were, plus at least his press conference mentioned military ballots that had not been counted yet. He's sort of hoping that that would make up the difference between 1.2 and 1%. It's a little bit of a long shot, however, but that's what he's banking on.
So assuming that Evers is the winner in this race, as the Associated Press has called at this point, Joe, what does an Evers administration look like in Wisconsin?
Well, one thing, it's going to be a little more pro-education. I think we all safely agree with that. I think that was the number one issue for people voting for Tony Evers. He obviously knows education. He's been in the Board of Regents for, I don't know, 8-10 years. So he obviously is very supportive of the K-12 system. So that will be one of the major differences. I also think that, and I believe it or not, I think he will be able to work with the Republican the legislature, the Senate, the Assembly, because I think one of the big issues in Wisconsin is roads. And I think I never understood why they couldn't come to an agreement and put some money into the roads and kind of improve the roads in a state that haven't been deteriorating for years. So I see him as a person willing to compromise. He's almost going to have to do that. The one other thing I'll mention that hasn't been discussed much is that this makes the redistricting in Wisconsin, or gerrymandering, whatever you may want to call it, substantially different than what it was 10 years ago. When one party controls the Assembly, the Senate, the governorship, they can draw the lines the way they want to do. And that's one of the reasons the Republicans have maintained control of the state legislature and, by the way, the congressional delegation. Having a governor in place that can veto that type of redistricting will do wonders for the Democrats running for the legislature after 2020.
Yeah, Sam, do you think we're going to see some potentially radical change, especially, the Evers administration is going to have to come out with a budget very quickly taking office here? And, do you foresee radical change there?
I think I'm with Joe on this. I don't foresee radical change. I think that this is going to be there's an opportunity here that's opened up for governing and for bipartisan governing. And so it will be an interesting test to see how this plays out. I certainly, there are going to be aspects of the budget that are going to be changed or tweaked in the coming month or so that has to be kind of pushed forward here. And certainly education is going to be one of those areas where we're going to see that. Radical change, I think it's too soon to tell because, again, we've got a sense of where Tony Evers has campaigned on some of these issues, but he's got to do it now governing with a Senate and an assembly that are Republican. And so he's going to have to figure out a way to work with them and vice versa. The Senate and the assembly are going to have to figure out a way to work with Governor Evers as well.
Yeah, Keith, do you have thoughts on this?
Well, we've lived under a radical administration for 8 years. Governor Walker seems to have gone down if Scott Holes has been an attractive campaign issue. The governor was committed to no tax increases. And so I think he's paying the price for his radicalism on that issue, which he thought would play well for a third time, and it didn't work out for him. So there's going to have to be some tax increases. If roads are going to be addressed, if education is going to be improved, then Tony Evers is going to have to convince the Republican-controlled legislature in these 2 years that it's time to get back to Wisconsin values, and that is a willingness to pay taxes to achieve public goods. That's not radical. That's our tradition. And I think we're going to get back to a more traditional outlook on how we approach our politics here in this state.
And Joe.
Yeah, I'm going to mention two other things that kind of popped into my head. One is health care. Mm-hmm. I would expect that Governor-elect Evers would want federal Medicaid money.
Medicaid expansion.
And I think that would be a real plus for the state dollar-wise. And the second would be the environment. It's very clear that the administration has modified and become much more pro-business over the last few years, especially regarding the environment, large farms, things of that sort. I would expect that an Evers administration would pull back from that and perhaps bring scientists back into the DNR, which was a laughing joke at some point when the governor was on campus here, governor-elect was on campus here.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're breaking down the results of this week's election with a team of local political analysts, political scientist Joe Heim and political science lecturer Sam Shinta, both from the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and Professor Keith Knutson from Viterbo University. So, you know, as we've mentioned, the governor and a number of other top seats have flipped from Republican control to Democratic control, you know, still waiting for the results potentially at this point in the at this time for the attorney general's race to be called. But so we saw these seats flip, but we didn't see a lot of seats flip in the state legislature. And, you know, Keith, what does this say about our state?
The Republicans have gerrymandered the daylights out of this state. Democrats win all the top-level offices, as Joe has just referenced, and there's no change in the state assembly, and the Republicans pick up two or three one. State Senate seats. Just one?
One so far.
The legislature is locked into Republican domination, and Joe's referenced it out of the census coming up in 2020. Governor Evers will be in a position to insist upon some compromise on these outlandishly gerrymandered districts in our state.
Joe, was there an example of the way that these districts favor the incumbent party in the state? Was there something that really stuck out to you as like, yep, there it is?
Well, I think it's just the numbers itself. The fact that I have not seen the final figures, but I'm going to guess that there was a pretty close number of people that voted Democratic for assembly candidates versus number of people that voted for Republican assembly candidates. I will bet you that it was pretty close to even. And yet the result in the assembly are 65-34. In the Senate, I think they may have picked up one seat. So it's those are indications of redistricting problems. There is no change in the 5-3 I got the right 5-3 congressional districts. None of them are really very close. They're designed for that purpose. So that's kind of, you know, if you have fairly substantial changes, for example, in the United States in terms of the House of Representatives, and nothing in Wisconsin was even close, kind of tells you the districts are designed for that purpose.
So let's dig into some of these legislative races in our area. You know, first, four-term incumbent Steve Doyle held on to his seat representing the 94th Assembly District. You know, Sam, what were the results of that race like? Were there any surprises there?
I don't think so. And, you know, Steve, again, campaigned the way that he campaigns every time, which is as someone who's willing to work across the aisle, who's willing to work with the other side. He represents his district well that way because he understands that he's in a district that tilts more Republican than Democrat, and he knows that's what he needs to do. So I don't think that I was surprised at all with the numbers in that race. I think he got close to 60% in that, between 55 and 60% in that race. So nothing too surprising there, just standard Steve Doyle stuff.
And the 96th Assembly to the south of La Crosse, you know, that was an open race after Republican Representative Lee Nierson decided not to run for re-election. But Republicans held on to that seat with Lauren Oldenburg coming in as the winner. You know, Keith, what are your thoughts on the results of that race?
Well, that was two farmers going at each other, and it was a fairly close race, but an indication that on the national level, the Republican Party and President Trump's support in rural America stays strong, and Vernon County and Crawford reflected that strength. But yet a closeness that might make Republicans wonder a little bit about holding on to that seat in the future.
Joe, what are your thoughts? Was the seat really up for grabs for Democrats?
I thought it was. 2 years ago, that area went for Trump. Last spring in the Supreme Court race, it went, we'll call it the Democratic candidate for state Supreme Court. But if you look around the rest of the areas, these assembly districts to the north of us, I think it's the 92nd, the assembly districts to the east of us, that's Nancy Vandermeer, Howard Markline's state Senate district to the south, all went Republican last night. In other words, there is an indication that the results in the 96 are not that all unusual for the rest of the rural southwestern Wisconsin. You also have to know that the spending was substantially on one side there versus the other. I have friends down there that said they were getting mailings daily, and advertising basically was on the Oldenburg side. So he had some advantages from a lot of outside support, and it was a very close race.
As you mentioned, Representative Trey Pronshinsky held on to his seat in the 92nd Assembly District. You know, Sam, is that surprising? I mean, considering that seat was held by a Democrat for a number of years before Trey Pronshinsky picked it up in 2016.
Mm-hmm. I would say mildly surprising on that one. But again, I think what we're seeing is what Keith is pointing out and reinforcing, which is we're seeing this rural thing play out in Wisconsin pretty clearly. And that is where the president, not only in Wisconsin but nationwide, continues to have some pretty strong coattails.
Keith, do you think that, are the results of last night's, these legislative races, do you think they're telling of what future races might look like in western Wisconsin?
Well, I think so. I think that, again, we're going to get back to, after the census, redistricting. That won't affect 2020, but in 2022, I think we're going to see more fairly divided representative districts, and the Democrats are then going to have a chance if they can keep their close to a majority vote across the state, which I think they're at right now. Then they'll actually be winning some representation in the state legislature. We'll see some different policies. I think out of last night, we're going to see a significant difference. If Josh Call wins the Attorney General's position, along with Governor-elect Evers, we'll be pulling out of this lawsuit challenging Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And it was just one more contradiction the governor had to grapple with. He was kind of against Obamacare before, during this campaign. He sort of became an advocate of at least portions of Obamacare. And I think after 8 years of, again, I call it very ideologically driven state governance, the governor himself has gotten caught up in the conundrum of stances taken simply for ideological purposes that have been counterproductive to the citizens of this state. It would seem to me last night the citizens in this state said enough is enough, and let's start getting into some programs that for Republicans might be ideologically challenging but are beneficial to a significant portion of the population.
Joe, what are your thoughts on this, on, what last night's vote or what this week's vote says about, where voters, what residents are thinking?
If you look back over the last 8 years, Governor Walker won three different elections. State legislature essentially stayed Republican for those 8 years. And throw in the fact that Donald Trump carried the state in 2016. That gave the appearance, at least, of the state maybe moving towards the red side. What we saw last night was a move back to the purple level, and a reversal and sort of a back to the way Wisconsin traditionally has been going back and forth. And the closeness of the elections kind of tell you that as well. So that's I see that as an example of the typical way Wisconsin has been running for years, and we're sort of getting back to the way we normally have been.
One last legislative race I wanted to touch on today was the 31st Senate District, and that was open after Democrat Kathleen Vinehout decided to, run for the governor's race unsuccessfully in the partisan primary. Joe, what did we see, from that race? What were the results there?
I haven't seen the final results in the sense of where the vote came from, but I believe that Jeff Smith, the Democrat, won that area. And I'm thinking going north, Eau Claire is in that district, so I'm kind of guessing that that's where the decision was made. I don't know how the rural area in that particular area voted, but that's my assessment of it. It's sort of stayed in the Democratic side. That area has been trending Democratic for years, just slowly but surely. And that's why Kathleen Vinehout held it for that long.
One last statewide race that I wanted to touch on was the state attorney general's race. Now, at the time of this recording, it is yet to be called. Democrat Josh Call has declared himself the winner of that race. He has less than 1% over his opponent, Brad Schimmel. Sam, I wonder if that's a surprise to you.
I would say that one was a bit surprising to me, and surprising at least because of the people I've been talking with felt that Schimmel had a lead, and when I pulled my classes, they seemed to feel that was one of the races that was going to go. It was a pretty clear assessment that students and folks I was talking with felt that Schimmel, while it was going to be close, was going to prevail. But obviously, Call ran a very good race here, and he highlighted some areas of difference and highlighted things that people actually cared about. And if we going back to something that Keith had referenced before, too, and just looking at the polling data, healthcare was the number one issue for people in this election. And so somehow, subtly, this whole idea of this Affordable Care Act lawsuit might have been playing a role in some of this stuff. I think that people knew that this was something that was pushed forward by the Attorney General. And so maybe that is something that made a difference. We won't know until we break down some of these numbers after a while. But maybe subtly that was playing a role in this as well.
Keith, what are your thoughts on this?
I've been thinking that maybe Tammy Baldwin would have coattail effects for Democrats. Now that we don't have a straight party ballot anymore, that is the opportunity to vote straight Democratic or Republican, maybe the coattail effect is lessened as a result of that. I wonder if that was the intention of implementing that ballot law. But I do think that on health care, the opposition throughout the 8 years of Republican domination in the state is coming back to bite Republicans. People are seeing that they're now in a majority of the nation favors Obamacare, and I think that's the case in the state. And people are discovering that although the perceived intrusion of government on freedom of choice is something that's not so attractive, the benefits that come out of the legislation just can't be denied, and people are maybe somewhat reluctantly even becoming advocates of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, Joe, what are your thoughts on how health care shaped this year's elections? I mean, we saw Republicans all over, including, you know, Scott Walker, talking about protections for pre-existing conditions. And, you know, that is something that came out of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, the pre-existing condition was, I think the Democrats hammered Republicans on that one. You can't really have it both ways. Mm-hmm. You can't be suing in courts and supporting federal legislation to get rid of Obamacare and then on the other side saying, you were going to try to protect a certain element of it. It just didn't quite sell with people. By the way, I agree with what Sam said, that the Schimmel loss was probably the biggest single surprise last night in the state of Wisconsin anyway. There's always surprises in elections, and that certainly was one. I'll add one thing to this. I thought one of the most effective ads I saw on TV was holding up this coin that they spent about $10,000 on. Maybe people all understand $10,000 for a commemorative coin. And then there was this box of, I think it was a rape kit or something that hadn't been done. They took years to get the stuff taken care of. And I thought that was a very effective ad, frankly. And it ran a lot, of course. But sometimes ads don't make an impression. This one did.
So this race is technically not called yet, even though Josh Call has declared himself the winner. What would it look like if Brad Schimmel were able to hold on to the Attorney General's position and Tony Evers came in as governor? I mean, what would that mean for our state?
Well, it means by the way, that's an independent job. You're the lawyer for the state of Wisconsin, and you're supposed to be an independent office holder. Sometimes the Schimmel administration seemed a little bit too close to the Walker administration. It might have been politically wiser to be a little more independent, because that's exactly what that job is supposed to be. So and I don't know if it's necessarily going to reverse a lot of the stuff that's happened in the past, but I think you'd find that Josh Call will be a little more independent than perhaps Brad Schimmel was.
Keith, your thoughts on this quickly here.
I think environmentally, Schimmel had allowed some of these deep wells close to riverbeds that many environmentalists were really upset about. And Joe mentioned the environment earlier, and I think environmental issues were really a drag on both Governor Walker and Attorney General Schimmel.
Keith Knutson, history professor at Viterbo University, is here with us today to discuss the results of the November election. Also joining us are UWL political scientist Joe Heim and UWL political science lecturer Sam Shenta. Coming up, we'll dig into the results of several referendums that were on the ballot in La Crosse County this week. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, WPR.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to WPR coverage of other races on this year's ballot. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're taking a look at local and statewide results of the 2018 midterm election. Many of the races at the top of the ballot were incredibly close after a strong voter turnout, with some races yet to be called. But that momentum largely fell short of changing the balance in the state legislature. What did the blue wave mean for congressional races in the state and local ballot referendums? Joining us now to talk about the election results are Joe Heim, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, Sam Shinta, Political Science Lecturer at UWL, and Keith Knutson, History Professor at Viterbo University. So incumbent U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin held on to her seat last night. Sam, was she ever in any danger, do you think?
Yeah, I think the danger was maybe overstated throughout this race. Senator Baldwin does an outstanding job of constituent service work, of reaching out to those rural communities that I think there's this maybe a stereotype that, oh, you know, the liberal from Madison is not going to play well in a state like Wisconsin, especially if we buy into this whole politics of resentment thesis that has been offered up by UW Professor Kathy Kramer. And yet Senator Baldwin bucks that trend, but she does it because she works hard, because she gets out to those areas, because she meets those voters, because she sponsors legislation that helps those voters. And I think she's rewarded for that. So yeah, I don't think that there was any real danger there. It was probably at times tighter than what she was anticipating or what the Democrats maybe were hoping, but I wasn't very surprised by that result.
Joe, before the broadcast, you mentioned that you feel like Western Wisconsin played a role in Senator Baldwin's win last night. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, if you kind of take a look at a picture of the state of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Dane County, they vote Democratic, and there's not a lot of predictability to that. It just goes up and down a few percentage points, and sometimes a turnout. The suburbs of Milwaukee go Republican, and that's pretty standard. The Fox River Valley goes Republican. So there's a lot of parts of Wisconsin that are almost pretty well set. What differentiates the rest of the state is the northern, but particularly western and southwestern Wisconsin. There's a lot of evidence that these are areas that flip-flop back and forth. I'll give you just one example. The western Wisconsin, virtually with a few exceptions, all the counties in western Wisconsin and southwestern Wisconsin went for Donald Trump. 2 years later, a year and a half later, we mentioned the Supreme Court race where the Democrats and the Republicans took sides on it. 23 counties that went for Donald Trump vote for Rebecca Dollett, who's the sort of Democratic candidate. So, I mean, that tells you, and most of those were in western and southwestern Wisconsin, almost all those counties, and it kind of in northern to some degree. But it tells you that this area does make a difference. I make a joke that the governor ought to have Governor Walker ought to have an apartment here. He's here so often, and frankly, I think Evers recognized that too. And he sort of recognized towards the end of the campaign that they were out here a lot. It's because this area does go back and forth quite a bit, so it's kind of good to be in an area that is not just totally red or totally blue, and can in fact go either way.
Keith, in the first half of the show, you mentioned you feel like Senator Baldwin might have, you know, created a coattail effect for some of the other down-ballot races here. You know, can you talk a little bit about, you know, how you think her race might have impacted other races in the state?
Well, on her race, initially, there was a lot of money pumped into this state that was intended to engage in negative advertising and try to set the stage for bringing her down. And I think that's where the danger was, and she was well prepared to stand up to that big money onslaught. In the race against Leah Vukmir, my opinion is that her opponent ran a very ill-positioned attempt at gaining the U.S. Senate seat. In the Year of the Woman, Vukmir, a nurse, could have presented herself as an advocate for women's issues, putting herself on TV with weaponry and trying to create sort of this scare that President Trump has done a good has effectively used. I wouldn't say it's a good job. I don't think it's very admirable. So the race ended up being like a 10-point win, I believe. And all through the summer, the Marquette Law School poll was showing Baldwin up by 10 points. So I think that provided the coattail opportunity then. Citizens moving towards Senator Baldwin and then providing this down ballot opportunity. Well, if I'm going to go with this Democrat, maybe I'll go for Tony Evers and Josh Call on down the line. But of course, that then stops once the Republicans in this state have set up the gerrymandered assembly districts. And there we see no change in the makeup. Only a one state Senate seat change so far out of the outcome. And there's something fishy in that. And there's been this structure throughout the decade. So back to change, one of the changes that we're going to see is in this drawing of our district lines. And the hope is that Governor-elect Evers he won't be in a position to herd Democrats into gerrymandering for Democrats, and maybe out of this we can get some actual integrity in our representative districts and play out what we find here in western Wisconsin, which we were talking about earlier. This is a swing area. We've seen it with past presidential elections, visits from presidential candidates. In our area of the state, and Wisconsin has traditionally been this, voting for policies as opposed to getting set up for predetermined outcomes.
You mentioned that a lot of people were calling this the Year of the Woman, that we saw a record number of women candidates across the U.S. Sam, did we see that energy in Wisconsin at all?
I think to a degree. We didn't have as many female candidates running, obviously, and so it was going to be a muted effect. But obviously, I think the fact that we've got this female senator already, I mean, that's going to have some national, that's going to play into the national coattail effect on that as well. But it was two women pitting against each other. Tammy Baldwin ran embracing a lot of those issues. I think that certainly served her well, as Keith pointed out. But yeah, there's no doubt once you look at the national landscape that this was an historic year. We now have more women in the House of Representatives than ever before in American history. And what's fascinating to me is we talk about the Year of the Women, but it's also the Year of Representation. What we're seeing nationally is this trend of not just women, but the type of women who were elected last night, which is just utterly fascinating. So just real quickly, just looking, we've got our first two Muslim women who were elected to Congress in the House of Representatives, one from Michigan, one from Minnesota. We've got our first refugee who was elected, who also happens to be a woman from Minnesota. We've got our first Native American woman, and there was actually two Native American women who were voted yesterday. We've got our first women governors in Maine and South Dakota. We've got Pennsylvania went from no women in a 21-person congressional delegation to four women in a congressional delegation. And so there is a big shift happening. So maybe it didn't play out in this election, but I think what this sets up is when we look into 2020, into 2022, I think you're going to see some wave effect here in Wisconsin. You're going to see more women candidates running in 2 years.
Joe, historically, how has Wisconsin done when it comes to women in office and also, you know, other types of representation, whether that be, you know, religion or race or ethnicity? You know, how has Wisconsin done on this issue?
Not terribly good. Statewide, we have not had a governor, for example, or Tammy Baldwin, I believe, was the first woman that was the U.S. senator from the state. The Supreme Court might be an exception because women have done quite well there. But overall, For Congress, at least statewide level, there haven't been a lot of women winning races. In the legislature, a little bit more so, but still not by substantial numbers. By the way, the Baldwin race was identified, I think as early as last January, as one of the 10 most vulnerable Democrats mm-hmm. in the United States. And if you remember, there were ads and money was flown into Wisconsin against her in January, February, March of last year. And I thought, wow, this is awfully early to be spending that kind of money. Once the polls started coming out, she was about 10 points ahead. And every poll I saw this summer and fall, she was 10 points ahead. It was amazingly steady. And I think it reflected the fact that she was an incumbent. By the way, this was an incumbent year. When the economy is really good, people tend to vote for incumbents. And it was an advantage for her. And she worked very hard the last 6 years. So, you know, all in all, that all kind of fell into place for her. Leah Vercmeer might have taken, like Keith said, might have taken a better advantage of that, but she didn't, frankly. She does not have a reputation for promoting women's issues. And so I don't think that helped her at all, frankly. So for the voters in Wisconsin, to be blunt, you had a very conservative woman on the far right. You had a very liberal woman on the far left. And the voters in Wisconsin chose the woman on the far right, left. And so that's long and short of it.
That's Joe Heim, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at UWL, here with us today to talk about local and state results of this week's election and what they mean for the Cooley region. He's joined by UWL Political Science Lecturer Sam Shinta and Viterbo University Professor Keith Knudsen. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The congressional race in this area, Ron Kind was elected to a 12th term in the 3rd Congressional District. Keith, was this a close race?
Well, I don't know the percentage outcome, but I don't think that there was much doubt that Congressman Kind would be reelected. He represents the kind of representation we get in this area. He goes to Congress and is prepared to work across party lines. He was at Viterbo a week before the election talking about an opioid bill he had sponsored and passed and President Trump had actually signed into law. Representative Kind, I think, has a real sense of the district he's representing is in the value line of the people we're sending either to state government or, as we see out of the outcomes in this area for national office, Ron Kind is very much in that vein.
As was mentioned earlier in the broadcast, none of the congressional seats flip party, even the open race in Paul Ryan's 1st Congressional District. Sam, was that surprising that we didn't see any of these congressional districts flip?
No, I think the one that a lot of Democrats were really hoping for was that first, was the Paul Ryan district. And there they had the famed Iron Stash Randy Bryce running. And this was one of those situations where, and this will be an interesting thing to break down nationally as well, we had a lot of personalities running on the Democratic side this election, and almost entirely those personalities were the ones who lost at the end of the day. It seemed like some of the quieter people who were running on the Democratic side actually prevailed. But some of these races where a lot of outside money was coming in ended up not going the way that the Democrats had hoped. And I think that ended up being in that first a double-digit win for the Republican in that one, Steele. I don't think that was much of a surprise. That's a pretty Republican district, and so it was a tantalizing get potentially for the Democrats, but it wasn't able to pull through.
And so how will these, the congressional races, the Senate race, I mean, how will these, this representation from Wisconsin have an impact on, Congress? What does this kind of contribute to the changes we saw in Congress last night?
It's status quo for Wisconsin, really. I mean, it fundamentally is. So what will be interesting is that I don't know much about the Republican candidate in the first. I know that he did have the president come out. What'll be fascinating to watch in the House of Representatives generally is how many of these Republicans, now that they're in the minority, run. Will they work to try and run to the center and work with the new Democratic majority, or will we have a hardened core of partisanship there that will make work really difficult? I think by and large, many of the Republicans who are part of that congressional delegation, while they're on the right, they definitely work more toward that center, so they're more pragmatic in that perspective. So I think that it's going to just behoove them to be able to work together, hopefully. I think that, you know, we'll see what is going to happen at the national level. But, yeah, I don't know that we – I don't think that it's going to be a big shift. But, Keith, you
– Yeah, Keith.
A lot of the Democrats elected, we've seen some, maybe we may call them Berniacs. Bernie Sanders supported several successful Democratic candidates. But I think in whole, new Democratic representatives in the House of Representatives are generally going to be more center, more and now what's going to be seen is where's President Trump? If things are going to be accomplished, I think that for the Republicans in the House, a couple pickups for Freedom Caucus type characters, and they're going to make a play for the leadership in the House conference in the House of Representatives. So that my view would be that if the Republicans are going to go more to the right, they're going to marginalize themselves. Mm-hmm. And so what will come out of the House will, of course, have to be compromised with increased Republican seats in the U.S. Senate. And so we might go back to the 90s and Bill Clinton's triangulation. I don't know that I like that term. But I think President Trump now in his second term, in the second half of his first term here, is going to have to make his decision on in my view, it would be, is he actually going to govern? Not a whole lot was done congressionally through lawmaking in these first 2 years. We've got some lawmaking to do, and there are some opportunities with a little bit more center-oriented Democrats in the House.
Just picking up on that, Keith is absolutely right. These are suburban Democrats, by and large, who tend to be more centrist in their partisanship. And so, but what was ironic is that while that was happening in the Senate, the senators who were winning, who were flipping seats or winning in those races, tended to be further to the right. Mm-hmm. And so we have a Senate right now, a national Senate, that is going to be a little bit more extreme on the right in terms of the Republican side. It will be very interesting to see what that House caucus does, because the opportunity there is there in the House, at least, to govern, especially with centrist Democrats. So whether the Republicans take up that lead, which could have big implications in 2 years, because if there is a sense from the American public that we're putting these people into the House because we want to see governance, well, they're going to either be reaffirmed or we're going to have more cleaning of House in 2 years if people don't actually follow through on that.
Sam, you mentioned that, you know, we saw some national names come out for candidates in Wisconsin. You know, we saw President Trump visit the state. Former President Barack Obama was here. Joe, do we have a sense of how the attention from, you know, big names in politics impacted races in the state last night?
It adds a lot of excitement to the campaigns, and particularly those people working on campaigns. But I've never thought that endorsements had an enormous impact in the state of Wisconsin. The president is having a press conference and basically saying the Republicans did really great. And he was picking out, of course, the places where he went and campaigned. Most of the places he went and campaigned, however, were red states that voted for him 2 years ago. And he was simply trying to flip those areas to stay with him. His visit to Wisconsin didn't seem to have much impact, frankly. On the other hand, in other words, he endorsed the governor and endorsed Leah Berkmeyer. Obviously, that didn't work real well. On the other hand, you know, how much credit can you give Barack Obama and other Democrats for visiting the state to help Democrats win? You know, you can kind of, as I said, I don't think they play an enormous role. They help out, get out the vote a little bit, but not necessarily swing elections. At least that's my opinion.
Keith, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, 2 years ago when Donald Trump carried the state by, what, 20,000 votes, turnout in Milwaukee was down, I think, 20%. I think on both sides, the personalities are indeed get out the vote. And clearly the Republican strategy was to play to their base. I think that in order to expand opportunities for the Democrats, it couldn't be just a base election. It had to be moderate the message a bit and look at this perceived dysfunction in government. And my estimation of the Democrats who've won office in the House is that, again, the Democrats are poised for a move towards the center, a capacity to compromise. Now, I don't think Ron Kind has this problem in this district, but some of those Democrats are going to be more to the left. But we talk about this polarized society, but I think the polarization is many Republicans have moved much further right. And even before this election, we see more Democrats center-oriented. There are, of course, the liberal element of the Democratic Party, I suppose epitomized by Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. But out of that caucus in the Congress, I think we see this center orientation and, again, capacity to compromise. Now the question is, will the other side work with a compromise? We saw the Republican strategy after 2010 not compromise with Obama and Democrats. Since the Republicans on the national level have had unified control of the government, they've not had to compromise. Now with the division, now we get into governance and capacity to govern through compromise, and that's been the genius of the system from the start.
Sam, what was voter turnout like in this year's election?
The number I saw last night was just north of 62% for the state, which is an awesome number. Obviously, we'd love to have it at 100%, but we know we'll never get there. I'd actually gotten that number from watching Joe Heim on the news last night. I think you said something like 62.3%. And we're still obviously trying to get the official canvas number. But if that 62% holds, it will be the highest midterm turnout that I've seen or that we've recorded, certainly since the 1940s. It's higher than 2014. We're at 55%. We're actually at 62% getting into our presidential year numbers for turnout. So obviously a lot of people showed up at the polls yesterday. And anecdotally, talking with several students, there were long lines here on campus to vote. There were long lines in other areas around town to vote, which is exactly what you want to see. You want to see people getting out there. We want to see people getting out and getting excited about voting and participating.
Yeah, La Crosse County has reported at this point that their voter turnout was 85% in La Crosse County. I mean, Joe, why did we see so many people interested to get out to the polls?
That was a little different than what I'd heard last night.
I'd heard
70%, yeah. Sometimes it depends on how you count. You're counting registered voters. And if there are new voters, for example, they're not necessarily counted in the statistics, believe it or not. I remember once more than 100% in a particular area voted, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. How did that happen? Anyway, La Crosse County has always historically had a higher voter turnout than the rest of the state, mm-hmm. and I think it proved true again last night.
Keith.
And the turnout is in the face of an effort in this state and many states to try to suppress voter turnout with voter ID regulations. Not in this state, but in three or four states, same-day registration was passed through a referendum. And so the turnout is, again, in my estimation, a reaction to this effort by politicians to suppress voter turnout. And I think these voters are saying that they're tired of this and they want their government to work for them. They don't need blockages from the people who are making the laws.
I just want to really quickly, we're running out of time here. Last night there was a referendum on the ballot for road funding in La Crosse County. And, you know, voters most voters said they were in favor of this premier resort area tax, PRAT, that we have, you know, gone to referendum for and before, but failed to get any attention in the legislature. And I just wonder, Joe, is this going to be any different if La Crosse County brings this PRAT again to the legislature? Are we going to see a different outcome?
Probably not. I'll give you a fast answer. The first referendum, by the way, should the county spend $5 million more in roads? And that had a very strong yes on it. In other words, the public in western Wisconsin, especially in La Crosse County, wants the roads taken care of. That's really clear. And the second, third, and fourth referendum had to do with where the money should come from. And the PRAT tax is actually a slight increase in sales tax on certain businesses. So I think people saw that as a fairly mild way of reacting. And they had voted for it before. I know the Chamber of Commerce opposed that, for example, but and a lot of businesses opposed it. But I think the public in general sees sales tax as a relatively safe way to go. The second two referendum had to do with wheel tax and property tax, and the public didn't like that.
We've been talking with Joe Heim, political scientist at UWL, Sam Shinta, political science lecturer at UWL, and Keith Knudsen, professor at Viterbo University, about local, state, and national impacts of this week's election. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.